Universe, Season 18, Episode 8, I Died Off Screen. The book, I, Jedi, by Michael Stackpole. The year? Who cares? With your hosts, Jeff and John, let's go!
Hey, everybody, welcome to Expounded Universe, the Star Wars novel discussion podcast. I just bit my tongue, and I'm Jeff. And
that's how you know you're alive. Start every episode biting your tongue, getting a little blood.
You'd think I'd just do the take again. I bit my tongue, and I had like kind of interior ouch. But instead of saying ouch, I just was like, I'll just announce I bit my tongue, and then we'll proceed.
And then proceed as usual.
Times are tough when you bit your tongue, but you have an hour of talking about Star Wars to do.
It's true.
Mm-hmm. So anyway, we haven't done this show in a while because I just got back from camping.
Yay, camping.
And we're not going to do this show for a while because John is about to vacation.
Yay. I'm going to go to Washington, D.C., our nation's capital.
Yep, where he intends to wash himself.
I'll wash myself in the Washington.
So while he's off visiting the many fine sights of Washington, D.C., such as a Waffle House and a Fat Burger.
Man, I would be amazed if there were any of those anywhere near where I am.
I'm sure there won't be. Are you planning to do Capitol stuff? Are you planning to go out and like visit the Lincoln Memorial or the Reflecting Pool or whatever?
Maybe.
Yeah.
I mean,
there's a little kid you have yet to have met that I think...
Oh, no, I met him.
Oh, okay, so you have met the family kid.
Yes,
okay.
I've met my little nephew.
I'm going
out there. My parents moved out to D.C. to be with my sister and kid out there. So this is me visiting them now that they have moved in.
Okay, so that's what... So that means that you could potentially skip out on the tiny child and go off to see America's heritage.
Yeah, I mean... The tiny child would come with.
Oh, okay.
Is the thing. I mean, my sister works for the government, so it's entirely possible she'll do. Like, one of the times I went and visited her, we just went down to the House of Representatives and we're like, hey, what's up?
Yeah, yeah.
You guys suck.
You people are the worst.
Hey, fuck you.
That sounds like a pretty worthwhile way to spend your time there.
Right?
Just try and find any given random asshole from the House of Reps and make their life miserable for a day.
Just follow them around like, hey, buddy, hey.
Hey, Matt Gaetz, where are you going? Hey, come here.
Hey, I just want to talk.
I want you to come here, but I don't want you to come here because there's a child here. You get what I'm saying, right?
I mean,
you understand. Stay away from children.
You're a piece of shit. I have this scheme about you walking into the ocean I'd like to discuss.
So, good. I'm glad to hear you're about to go have a good time. I, of course, had a great time camping. Everyone's thumbs up around here. Except for Star Wars, which we just keep skipping.
Yeah, well, you know, sometimes shit happens.
Yep, and don't worry, folks, I won't skip that much Star Wars because I bought that Lego game. So I'll be...
In case you were worried that Jeff was going to be starved for Star Wars...
Don't be. Now, I'll have plenty of I, Jedi, and, I don't know, running around as various characters doing little puzzles and so on with Legos.
Little puzzles.
I love how the game...
It's me, little puzzles.
I love how the game starts out with like, oh, you should probably come back and revisit this level once you've unlocked a bunch of characters. Because, you know, you're running around on the TNT-4 helping like 3PO and R2 escape. But I'm like, oh, I know so many unlock codes and shit for this game that I already have every class. It's just that they look stupid. They're like, you need a Wookiee for this. And I'm like, great, I've got Holiday Chewbacca.
Great. Here's Chewbacca in a big dumb robe.
Hey, well, you're gonna need a droid for this. Great. Here's D.O., that little one-wheel roller droid from the end of Revenge of the Sith. But now he's, like, dressed as a Christmas light for some reason.
No.
You've never even met him. You haven't watched that movie.
No.
He looks like a little traffic cone with a wheel.
Great. Good for him.
Yeah. He's a very minor character.
Good.
Anywho's. So, what we have to talk about today is chapters 25 through 28 of I, Jedi.
Yes, and
for those of you who are reading along.
We left our heroes.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, really just the one hero that we're following.
Just the one guy, really. Really, it's just sort of the one wife guy.
It's just the one guy.
Uh-huh.
So they had just gotten a delivery. They'd gotten some med supplies as well as a bunch of explosives that Corrin had wanted.
And this gave most of the Sky or the Solo extended family a chance to fuck off planet.
Oh yeah, they did. They fucked off planet hard
and on planet. No, but Han took off to go try and catch Kip Duran. Leia took her kids to go deal with the winter situation.
Oh no, Leia left her kids. That was the whole plot.
Oh, that's
point.
Right. They're still there. She went off to go deal with her missing third kid on that magic planet where winter's got her.
Yeah,
got him
the hidden
away.
Planet where even she doesn't know where it is.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. The one you can only get there. The only people who can get there are people who have already been there.
Yeah.
Yeah,
if you have a magic compass that shows you the way.
But beware, for a pirate curse will befall ye.
Oh no, I took the gold from this hidden planet where a kid was.
And now I can't taste apples.
I no longer know what apples is.
I mean, I've always found that, I mean, I know it's a major digression and we barely talked about the episode at all, but I love how they kill Barbossa and then bring him back and then make a big deal about killing him again. I was really hoping that after they killed him in the most recent one, they'd do another movie and just have him come out again, you know, right down that same set of stairs in that witch's house, just sort of like, and stuff back down, and I'm back, arr.
I did it again.
This be me respawn point, and I know where apples be spawning. anyway, yeah, they got some supplies and crap.
Yeah, so they got supplies, the head of the Solo family's fucked off, mm-hmm. and Corrin then told everyone that he's like, okay, I've got a plan.
Mm-hmm.
I got a plan, and we're going to take down Exar Kun, because he doesn't know what apples is, and I'm going to show him. I'm going to show him what apples is.
Yeah.
And take a crate of apples.
So at that point, he just said he had a masterful plan to destroy Exar Kun.
Yeah, and his plan, as far as we knew from last episode, was leave Streen in charge of guarding Luke while I go fuck off somewhere.
Yes, but now we know what his actual plan was, sort of, because this episode is a wheels within wheels chapter, because he, as far as we can tell at the start of the chapter, his plan is to take that Z-95 headhunter he just fixed, Mara Jade's headhunter, fly over to what he assumes is Exar Kun's temple.
I mean, it's very clearly Exar Kun's temple.
I mean, yeah, it's got that dark side of the force obelisk pyramid thing in it, and a big statue of Exar.
Yeah, if you're like wandering around planet and you're like, what's this? Oh, jungles and some old native temples, and then a, you know, black obsidian pyramid with a giant statue out front of an evil-looking guy. You know, that might be the place.
It might be, but then again, this guy is the king of the dark side from 4,000 years ago, who had this whole planet for a long time. That might just be one of his secondary temples that's, you know, he moved, there's a bigger one on the other side of the planet, and we just never checked.
I thought for sure you were going to say, hey, he just got bored of it, now he lives at the Waffle House.
Well, obviously the planet's going to have a Waffle House.
And, you know, if you've got a Waffle House on planet, that is going to be the center of evil.
It's in the Southern Rim.
I've got my force smothered and covered in dark side.
A fight breaks out that's how you can tell.
Yeah.
Always two there are. A crazy person at the Waffle House and a crazier person at the Waffle House.
So Corrin, he shows up.
He's just apparently going to bomb the shit out of the
temple. Yeah, he shows up at the temple, gets out of the Z-95 and has a crap load of those explosives. And he's like, all right, here we go. I'm just going to set these all up.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to shove one of these right underneath the statue. And he's mostly spending his time doing that while he is protecting his force presence.
Yes,
like,
yeah.
Streen got taught how to not, you know, constantly be reading people's thoughts and shit. So mm-hmm. he's like, all right, I'm taking that principle and using it to just really tighten in my force and not show anyone. And
yeah, his goal is to not make
keep it in my pants.
Yeah, he's trying not to make a spectacle of himself force-wise as he stomps around this temple garden with a big backpack full of Nergon 14 exploders.
These Nargons.
Mm-hmm. Gets them all laid out wherever he wants them, puts one under the base of the statue, and he's like, the little hole that this blows will ensure that you fall straight down and plunge into the water of your own stupid temple's fountains.
Yeah,
you ding-dong.
You built this in the middle of a lake for some reason, and all right, there you go.
Why wouldn't you? You know, when you got the money and the force power, you build in the middle of a lake. You get full lakefront property.
Full mm-hmm. lakefront.
But anyway, as he gets to a safe distance away from the temple, you may start to think to yourself, why didn't he just blow this shit up yet? Well, obviously, it's because this is the first stage of this fiendish trap.
Yes, he then drops his cloaking in the forest and is like, hey, fucker, what up?
any force bitches around here? And within like seconds, Exar Kun's like ghost form pops up in front of him, is like, ah, I see you have come to beg for my help, but as I promised, it will not come as easily.
He's like, no, obviously not. Why do you think I would do that?
I don't want your dumb help. Look at all these bombs I put all over your stupid buildings.
I know your weakness. You can't affect anything in the real world while you're a little ghost guy. And he's like, you're so dumb. You're such a dummy.
A week ago, that would have been true, but I recently met Vincent Schiavelli in a train station.
Weird.
Not that weird. That's just a reference to Ghost, like the seminal work of Ghosts.
Weird.
Most famous of the ghostly works.
Of all the ghostly works.
Come on, remember that part where Swayze gets taught to touch stuff by Vincent Schiavelli in a subway car?
You remember?
Come on, it's a good movie. You remember it.
I have not seen Ghost since I was like 7. I have no idea what the fuck goes on in Ghost.
Well, at least unlike everyone else, I'm not getting slapped for my outdated references.
Hey.
Topical.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Now wait till you hear my long-winded opinion about it. Just kidding, I don't have one. So anyway.
Yeah, Exar Kun shows up and he's just like, all right, so you think I can't do stuff in the real world? Well, you're a dummy. And he just melts all the detonators on the bombs.
Yeah, which causes Horn to just go, oh, oops.
Oops.
And then he gets flung around with the force for a while.
Oh, yeah.
He's getting tossed into rocks and so on, breaking a bunch of bones.
He gets fully Saruman Gandalf fight.
Mm-hmm. But he's trying to keep up a brave face the whole time. So he's just like, yep, okay. I'm not even here to kill you. I'm just here because I bought this land from the New Republic and I'm going to build my house here.
I gotta serve you an eviction notice. You see, after 4,000 years, your property rights have fallen away. And
yeah. And he's like, how dare you? And like flings him into a bunch of stuff. And he's like, yeah, I'm definitely going to put a TV there right where you are now.
Mm-hmm. Oh, God.
Just trying to keep it going. Gets flung around some more. There's a point where Exar Kun like shows off by telekinetically lifting all the bombs and throwing them into the lake.
Yeah.
And at this point, it looks bleak for our hero. But then we hear a voice ring out from the forest.
Well, I mean, there's a shitload that happens before that.
Okay,
fine. To be fair.
Yeah, there's a lot of back and forth between them.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to just skip over the entire chapter and go to the end.
You don't? We got a lot of ground to cover.
Eh.
That's fine. No, please. I will allow you to take the reins.
So, I mean, there's a shitload of stuff because we get, not only does he get, you know, thrown around and beaten up and he's like, all right, fine.
Mm-hmm.
That's not working. All right. Time to go at your mental mind.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. We get all the projections of failures and horrors put into his brain.
Yeah. So he has to see like projections of Mirax showing up and be like, hey, you let me die alone. Like, I'm going to die right now.
Yeah,
because being a Jedi was more important to you than I was.
I mean, honestly, it's funny because that's a bad tack to take. Like, you could just be like, no, I know she's not dead. I have it on good authority, and I would tell through the Force if she had died. So really, all you needed to have her pop up and say is, hey, you spent 2.5 months dicking around with Luke Skywalker in these woods instead of just coming and getting me. What are you doing?
I mean, that's more or less what it is.
Yeah, it's just funny that they pass it through this whole, like, lying part.
Well, the problem with most of these things is, especially when the person who's getting the whole hallucination is like, well, I know this is just a projection that he's putting in my mind, but I can't help but react to it.
Yeah. Like, I just find it funny that Exar can't help but gild the lily on this one, where he could have just literally had Mirax pop up and be like, dude, what are you playing fucking Jedis and Sith in the woods? I am in a coma somewhere, you asshole. But instead, she has to be like, and I died because of your negligence, which just gives him the tools to get past it.
Well, I mean, it's a bunch of that, and then like his dad disapproving of him, and
yeah, we get a little bit of I forget his name, but the dad,
and then like he gets to see
the lady,
a version of his unborn child.
Yes, and his first partner when he joined Rogue Squadron, Lou Jane Forge.
Yeah, dead.
She's dead. She got shot with blasters in the face, so she's all messed up when she's talking to him. She's like, hey, you.
Yeah, because you like to play hero, I'm dead.
Yeah. Yeah, same thing with the dad. The dad pops in and is like, I can't believe you married Mirax Tarek. His or her father hired the assassin that killed me.
And then you just went and married her.
Yeah.
Were you already in bed with her when this was happening? Are you just soft on it?
Did you trade the warmth of my body for the warmth of hers?
Huh? Did you embrace her body so that you could embrace my cold body?
Yeah, just harsh stuff to say.
Yeah, just real shitty things.
Mm-hmm.
And for his part, at least, he's like, all right, keep it together.
Mm-hmm.
Don't dark side, my dude. And like, in order to keep it together, he just straight punches his hand into the ground and breaks his own bones to be like, nope, keep it together.
He's got the strength. And Kuhn's just like, all right. I see that anger isn't going to do this. We'll go to plan B, sadness.
We'll go to sad times.
And that shows him his not yet even conceived children.
Here's what your kid could look like.
Yeah.
He would love you very much and call you Papa.
Mm-hmm.
He won't, though, because he'll never exist, because you're going to die.
And here's what your kid would look like, covered in bees.
Covered in bees. And here's what your kid would look like at an Arby's.
No! No! Why would he go to an Arby's?
No, it's not true.
I eat only Corellian food and that shit nasty.
the entire physical and mental torture of Corinhorn going on in this chapter is just ridiculous,
because
eventually, like, again, he gets to a point where he's like, all right, I
know this is all fake, but
I'm gonna break. I'm like on the edge of just giving up, and that's when he hears the voice.
Yeah, who's just like, hey, I heard there was a guy here I needed to rescue, even though he's a piece of crap.
Hey, is this the best you got, huh, Exarch Kuhn? Some ghosts of babies that don't exist? What a piece of shit you are.
Yeah, she has some trash talk, because it's Mara Jade. Mara Jade making her triumphant return to the book. She comes walking up, and her plan to verbally castigate Exarch Kuhn is to point out that he is a lower class of Sith compared to the one that she has dealt with.
Oh, yeah. She's like, look, I've known Dark Lords of the Sith, and all of them are way better than you. This is...
You're my fourth, and I'm not impressed.
Look, like, Isard isn't even a dark side user, and she wouldn't give a fuck about you.
Yeah, she'd have your ghost corpse dissected by now. Vader would just consider you a quaint anomaly and just ignore you entirely. And the Emperor, ugh.
The Emperor did what you failed to and killed the Jedi.
Yeah.
You are a little bitch baby.
I really love where his retort is like, yes, but he died. And Horn's like, yeah, dude, you're a ghost.
Yeah, dude, so did you.
You got nothing. You got nothing to stand on that one. And then she doesn't even mention the fourth Jedi or Dark Lord of the Sith that she has met, Jorus Bayoff.
Yeah, nothing about that.
Yeah, it doesn't bring him up at all. Why not? Why not drag even more books into this Frankenstein's monster?
I need more books. But eventually, Kuhn is like, ah, you fuckers. And then finally, instead of just drawing out the things that are like Horn's worries or fears or whatever,
mm-hmm.
he actually goes and probes into his brain and finds just a snippet of the idea of this is a trap.
Yes.
And he's like, oh, well, fuck you. Ah, you can't trap me. I'm going to go murder a guy. Yeah, you fucked up. You left my Starine in charge.
Yeah, because the big thing he was thinking was, he was like, don't worry, Mara. It's okay. Luke's still unconscious, but he's on like a plinth somewhere being guarded by Starine.
Yeah.
And Kuhn's like, Starine? That guy's a pushover.
He's my Starine.
Oh, no. Don't go get Starine.
No, and don't go there.
And then off goes the ghost, and Horn's just like, all right, help me up. And Mara Jade's like, well, don't we need to radio them for help? Why? Because he's about to wander into a huge trap? No, I think it's going to be fine.
Yeah, I do love that indeed she, like, picks him up and carries him to a headhunter, and eventually they're just like, they get their radio in, and they're like,
phone call.
Yeah, we killed him. He's
yeah,
done.
He's dead.
Yeah, it happened. And it's not even like, oh, they radio it in, and then next chapter we'll get the details. No. Nope, it's done.
No, it's just the fucking, it's the MASH fatality moment.
We spent half this fucking book getting to the point where we finally confront Exar Kun, and then it's just, anyway, he died off screen.
You know that feeling when you're playing like a cooperative board game or card game, and the bad guy dies, and it's still like four rounds till your turn, and you're like, I don't really care about this. That's how this feels. We're like, ooh, I can't wait to see what he's going to do to him. Oh, he's just going to make a quick phone call and ensure that he's dead. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I mean, I know, I get why that climactic moment happened in an old Kevin J. Anderson book from like 4 years earlier. There's no need to rehash it, but it still is eminently hilarious.
It's very funny that you would decide to set fully half your book on this planet during that book series and then get to the big climax and go, don't worry about it.
Yeah, he did.
Hand wave.
And Mara Jade's like, hey, let me help you out of this forest. And Horn's like, oh, geez, yeah, thanks so much. I thought you and I weren't friends. And she's like, yeah, well, You're my friend now, and friends get firemen carried out of jungles no matter how many broken bones they have.
Look, I owed you, and now I've paid you back. And he's like, damn, if coming out and confronting a Dark Lord of the Sith is what I get as payback, I will take some blaster bolts for you any day of the week.
I really wanted to be like, yeah, I also factored in how you fixed my old ship, so there, now you owe me a favor. In fact, $50.
Give me a buck right now.
Give me a dollar. That's where we're at. Give me one credit.
One.
He's like, I don't have credit. I'm on a Jedi planet.
Oop.
Oh, well.
Looks like somebody's crawling home.
Interest is compounding. Just became two credits.
God damn it.
So that's the chapter. I mean, I'm sorry if you were really hoping to find out what happens to Exar Kun. Read a different book.
Yeah, read the book it happens in. Apparently not this one.
But now we go back to the temple and get a bunch of catch up with basically everybody from the temple. The last thing, we do learn one more thing in this chapter before it closes out. As Mara's carrying him to the headhunter to fly him back to safety, she points out that she came back because she held up her end of the bargain and found some stuff out about Mirax.
Yeah, she's got some kind of data chip that's like, oh, I've got some information for you about nonsense that has gone down.
Yeah. So basically, you know, it's not much. She basically has a chip saying that in the last couple of months, Mirax had a hold on some item at a Nar Shaddaa black market. Nalhutta black market.
Yes.
And that's relevant because that's where the Invids operate. And they are theoretically the bad guys in this book that we will get to hear about how they lose.
Probably. I would love
if it's just both.
If it's just, oh yeah, he finds out where the Invids are, but Mirax is somewhere else, and he goes and saves her and then phones in, and they're like, yep, we took care of it.
Hey, Aaron Kraken here. We got him.
We did it.
Good job. You don't want to hear the details. Those are boring.
Anyway, I hope you enjoy your wife. Bye.
I hope you had a lot of time doing full detailed reads of people's intent, which seems to be your constant thing that you're always doing all the time.
Well, that's his thing.
Yeah. So anyway, we also an emergency Bacta tank was brought on in the last round of New Republic supplies, and he is totes fucked. He's got burns all over him and broken bones everywhere.
Yeah, he doesn't even get to be in the diaper tank that Luke was in. He is on a horizontal one where he's like, no, they won't even let you float. You have to be like just on your back, full sensory deprivation.
He's in the Boba Fett one. Because we've seen like four or five Bacta tanks over the course of Star Wars history, and he's in the Boba Fett one, the one where you have to lie down and sleep.
You got to sleep in this tank.
Yeah. He's not even gets to be in the funny Finn one where it's like a bunch of balloon packs all over you, and then you can stomp around with just those on, leaking everywhere.
Ugh.
Yeah, just this one, the boring lie down in a box one.
Yep.
6 hour shifts, and he hates it, and he's taking forever to kind of come back to his senses, and as he does, a whole bunch of things happen. More or less off screen, and largely just bringing us up to speed to where we are in the Kevin Anderson trilogy.
Aww.
Like, for example, unceremoniously, Han has dragged Kip back to this planet, but first dragged him to Coruscant, where he was going to face judgment for blowing up Kurita, but then Luke was like, nah, no, I don't
no,
think...
I'll have him face Jedi justice.
Yeah. By which I mean we'll make him a knight.
Is he will face nothing.
Yeah, no consequences. I think he's learned his lesson.
Look, he's real sorry. I mean, God bless. That is, again, one of my favorite bits in this is where it really feels like Stackpole coming after the things in those books.
Kinda.
Where fucking Corran Horn goes to Luke in this chapter and is like, no, you fucked up. Like, that dude killed billions of people. You can't just be like, yeah, but he's sorry, and slap him on the wrist. He needs to face actual punishment.
Yeah. I think we're a chapter. This chapter is entirely just sort of catch up with what's going on at the temple. I'm not even how Exar Kun was defeated. That's not part of it. It's just sort of him talking to Mara and him talking to Han and him just hanging out in the back to tank.
Not really.
Does he get the Luke conversation in this one?
Oh, yeah.
I thought that was the... whatever. If we want to do the Luke conversation, it's fine. Yeah. Basically, he calls Luke into a small room and he's like, dude, I'm leaving.
Yeah, I'm getting out of here.
I'm getting out of here.
And it's because... this place is not good for me.
It's not good, and it's not good for me in particular. And Luke's like, no, wait. Luke really doesn't want him to go. And I get it. Luke's, you know, already had to deal with Gantoris dying, with
Mara Jade leaving,
Kip doing,
blowing up an entire star system before he came back.
It's not going great.
No.
And so he doesn't want to have more hemorrhaging of the ranks. So he's like, hey, look, whatever you're mad about, we can fix it together. You can tell me whatever it is you need to change about the way this temple works, and I will incorporate it into my process. I am just trying to learn how to do this.
Yeah.
And Corrin's like, nah, dude, that's not good enough.
Look,
and it will not work.
There is nowhere near the level of, like, discipline and camaraderie. He's like, basically, you go to a training place to get broken down and turned into the mm-hmm. person you need to be.
Mm-hmm.
And Luke's like, well, I don't want everyone to just be Jedi clones. He's like, no, you get broken down, you're still the same person, but you get built up as a Jedi version of yourself.
Yeah, basically
instead
he
of
wants
just
boot camp.
Walking around.
Yeah, he basically wants boot camp.
Yeah.
He wants to make Jedi boot camp where you come here and you spend, you know, 6 months doing push-ups and running in mud and just doing shit like that and getting broken down to the point where all you can do is follow orders and accept teaching and then start training people in their specialties. And Luke's like, I don't want to do that. I mean, on the one hand, I get it. I get where Luke is coming from as well, because Luke is coming from a position where he's got 12 students and all of them are like 25.
Yeah. And I mean, the thing is, he's even like, look, man, I get it.
Mm-hmm.
I understand. We probably should have been doing something more, but that's even more reason for you to stay here, too, because you could help me with that. And
he's like, hire a drill sergeant from the New Republic. You don't need me for that.
Yeah. You can get anyone who knows about actual training methods
mm-hmm.
to help you with that. Also, I can't stay here with Kip. 100%
will not.
I cannot be on the same planet as that
and
guy.
That, like you were saying, that is definitely a dressing down. I mean, the funny thing is, Stackpole and Anderson are friends. Like, this was a whole thing where he asked permission to write this book to happen at the same time as the Anderson Academy trilogy, and like has a thank you in the book, and they've just done interviews in the past about how these books are interwoven. They are friends, but this feels like Stackpole not only dressing down Anderson's terrible plot from those, but also calling Star Wars into question.
I love that he's just like, no, dude, I can't. And Luke is like, oh, but it's fine. You see, we went over to Exar Kun's temple. You did what?
You took him to Exar Kun's temple? Yeah, you can't kill your presence of the dark side without facing the dark side directly.
So I took him there. He overcame his dark side, and look, now he's fine. He's like, no. Honestly, even if I believe you, even if I'm like, yeah, sure, he's just a regular nice guy now.
Yeah,
you can't let something like that go without punishment. There is a social contract that we have that you can't just say, nah, it's fine.
Yeah, he goes a little Foucault on everybody right around here. He gives us a whole, like, reason for monarchical punishment.
Oh, yeah. He's like, look, not only did he break the social contract, and we need that in order for people to believe that there is some sort of order in the galaxy,
mm-hmm.
but also we need that to, like, show that there is some sort of reason not to do things.
We need deterrence, and we also need something to be done for the surviving family members of the billions of people he killed.
Oh, yeah.
And Luke tries to go defensive. He's like, what, are you calling him a murderer? Are you calling me a murderer? Remember, I blew up the Death Star. It had millions of people on it. And while I was over on the dark side serving under the reborn emperor, I killed more people then. Do you think I should be in prison? And Horn's like, no, you destroyed a military target in self-defense. And
it
then
was a military action with a military target.
Yes. And then later, all of the reports that have been come out about your time as the dark side son of the emperor or whatever show that you consistently made decisions that preserved as much life as possible.
Yeah.
So no, I don't think you do. And also, I think you've spent a lot of time fixing yourself after that. You didn't just have another Jedi show up at court and be like, this guy should get off scot-free.
Yeah.
And I'm going to take him right back to the bad guy who told him to do it.
Yeah. And the fact that he, like you were saying, he's like, oh, well, don't you believe in forgiveness? And, you know, shouldn't we try and do what's right for Kip? And he's like, how good do you think it is for the billions of people that lost friends and family to see him wandering around? How good is that for their souls?
How are they going to feel when he shows up to rescue them later with a lightsaber you gave him?
Yeah. And he's like, well, look, it's fine, because, you see, Kip was under Exar Kun's control.
No, he wasn't. And that's just straight up the big pull. He's like, no, he wasn't. Yeah, he was. What are you talking about? If he was under Exar Kun's control, Exar Kun, the ghost who's been trying to kill you, possess people to murder you for weeks, then when he succeeded taking over Kip, Kip would have just strapped you to the Sun Crusher and flown you into space.
Yeah.
Or just parked it on you.
When he made it so that Kip shunted you out of your body, he would have just had you murdered because, you see, he has spent the last several weeks while you've been asleep trying to murder you as hard as he possibly can. If he was in control of Kip, you would be dead.
Yeah, he empowered Kip Duran, but he at no point was Kip 100% a mind thrall.
Yeah, he influenced him.
Yeah.
But that's why, you know, Kip didn't go out and just blow up Exar Kun's choice of things. He went and blew up a thing that he was pissed off about.
Yeah.
Did Kip.
Now, at this point, we get the big challenge where he's like, so anyway, I'm leaving because I can't be here with that guy. And Luke's like, so I guess you just think I'm an idiot, huh? You just think I'm a useless, pointless, dumb idiot? And Corrin's like, yeah, kinda.
Yeah, well, you know.
And it causes this moment where Luke's like, oh, those are fighting words. He's like, okay, explain. What am I doing wrong, big guy? And Horn's like, I don't think you've ever really thought about what Obi-Wan and Yoda were doing.
Yeah.
And that's the point where he starts questioning Star Wars.
He's like, I'm pretty sure you were a trap.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you think they would put you on Tatooine, where Vader was from, with the last goddamn name Skywalker?
With the only people he was related to that he was aware of. You think he wouldn't check? And also, didn't you apply a dozen times to be in the Empire before you joined the Rebellion?
Yeah, you wanted to go to Imperial Flight School.
Yeah.
Do you think the name Skywalker wouldn't eventually make its way to him? Like, you were set up to try and get Vader on planet so Obi-Wan could confront him.
You met two people who personally knew and trained Anakin Skywalker, and neither one of them told you who he was, because they were afraid that if you knew, you wouldn't pull the trigger on him.
Yeah, they wanted him down, put down like the rabid dog he was, and telling you the truth was not the way to go about it. So yeah, if you look at it from a certain point of view, they were definitely fucking with you.
And this kind of breaks Luke a little bit, where he's just like, Jesus, I hadn't even considered that.
Yeah, he's just like, dude, you see everything in the whole black and white can be redeemed, can't be redeemed,
right,
good and evil, because of what happened to you.
Mm-hmm. Like, that's because when Luke tries to pull out the dark side card, where he's like, you can't, he tries to pull the Yoda. He's like, you can't leave now, Corrin. If you leave now, you'll forsake your training and you'll be closer to the dark side than ever. And Corrin's like, dude, you have, of all the people, you have the least right to come after me with that shit.
I mean, it is amazing to me that he's like, look, man, you got your ideas on the whole light, dark side, good and bad from your one very weird corner case interaction with Vader, who happened to be your father and was able to be redeemed. Let me tell you something, my dude. The dark side? Oh, I've been there.
Yeah. And the other thing is, he was trained entirely by, like, lifer Jedis, where he was trained by Obi-Wan and Yoda, who are both, like, they were Jedi their whole lives. They have nothing in their brains but Jedi doctrine. And Corran, on the other hand, is 40-something and has spent his whole life, like, a cop. So he's like, look, I have lived at the edge of the dark side my entire life. And unlike you, Mr. Big Training Jedi Master, I've never crossed the line.
He's like, yeah, I go to a domestic disturbance and see someone beaten to within an inch of their life with crying toddlers around them while their abusive husband is in the other room snoring. And did I want to go in there and absolutely just beat the Christ out of that guy? Yes, I didn't, though.
Yeah.
And you know what? Someone offered me a million credits to walk away from a spice deal that I busted, and I didn't.
And then when I arrested the guy who killed my father, who, by the way, cameo alert, Bossk.
Bossk murdered my dad.
I guess we had to hear about Bossk succeeding at anything at least once in his career.
Yeah. he's like, yeah, I could have, when I got him, just brought in a dead body and been like, yeah, he resisted arrest. And no one would have been like, oh, yeah, I'm going to even bat an eye at that.
Yeah.
I could have had revenge for my dad. I could have walked him into the police station,
yeah,
shot him in the head, and thousands of witnesses would have just gone, yeah, dude, he was trying to get away.
Yeah, yeah. So,
which mostly just means to me, oh, so you do have a corrupt system then. You could have just gotten away with murder is what you are saying, because the Corsac system is broken.
Yes, yeah. I mean, it's fucking Corellia. Up until we actually saw Corellia in Solo, A Star Wars Story or whatever, the books consistently painted Corellia as basically like space New York.
Yeah.
Or space Chicago, where, like, yeah, there's gleaming towers and so on, but everything is crime riddled all the time.
Yeah. So, he doesn't even bring up the fact that he's like, plus I had a Dark Lord of the Sith that's 4,000 years old.
Yeah, didn't come
twice
up.
Try to break me and did not.
Yeah. I mean, ultimately, that at a certain point, this just turns into bragging, because he could just be like, Luke,
I mean, he didn't bring it up. He was just like, yeah, look, I've been on the edge of the dark side forever, and maybe it makes me worse for not having crossed the line because I didn't fall and get redeemed, because that's your big boner thing, is falling and redeeming, but don't fucking call me a coward.
Yeah, but he's like, but look, I know why you want me to stay so bad is because you don't want your record to look like a big fail. It's not. You lost about 20% of your students, and the others, I just watched them kill a Dark Lord of the Sith that without you. They did that. You had 12 people. You made about 9 Jedi. Great job.
Look, man, it's fine. I get that you got sad dick because Mara didn't stay.
Yeah.
But you got to get over it.
I mean, so you'll marry her in another book that I'm sure I will weirdly intrude in a third book.
But yeah, at that point, he realizes that he's like, oh, man, this dude's been real sad, and I am just beating up on him at this point.
Yeah.
So he's like, okay, look, I get it. No, just because you're a Jedi master, no one said you would be good at teaching right off the bat. Mm-hmm. You did, 80% success rate. That's not terrible. That's nothing to sneeze at.
Yeah, in Corsac, we call that an A+. You get a bonus. what's the bottom of your scale? A-, you get a smaller bonus.
Yeah.
Policeman's unions. What are you going to do?
Yeah. But he's like, look, I also have to leave because, the big thing that you told me about coming here was the Corellian Jedi tradition and how I needed to, like, come kind of bring that here. But I honestly have no idea what that even means.
Mm-hmm.
And I need to leave to go find that out and become my own Jedi. And I'm not going to do that here.
Yeah. I mean, he leaves the door open. He's like, I might come back at some point, but ultimately right now, this isn't a fit for me. And also we established early on that this wasn't going to be a full course for me, that I was coming down here to learn some stuff before I went off on my way.
Yeah. You knew that if I got to a point where I was comfortable enough and could go get Mirax, I was going to leave. So now that I have a data chip with some info and I've gotten to a point where I mostly just can't learn more here and also don't want to be around history's greatest murderer, I'm gonna go. And at that point, R2 rolls in and is like, beep boop, there's a fucking Star Destroyer up there.
Yeah, which to me, I was like, oh shit, does that mean that we've gotten to the Admiral Dala part of this Kevin J. Anderson series? And then I was like, oh, no, wait, no, I remember now. And sure enough, he's like, yeah, don't worry about that that Star Destroyer. It's my ride.
Yeah, that's here for me.
That's here for me. That's my ride. Which means, of course, that it's time to finally meet Booster Tarek, owner of a Star Destroyer, the Errant Venture.
Yes, indeed. Next chapter, we get to go up to the Errant Venture.
Yes, he still has a Z-95, I assume because Mara just got another one.
Well, yeah, she flew in on one.
Yeah, and so she's just like, I don't keep it.
Well, yeah, because Luke was like, where are you even going to go? The Z-95 that's left has a fucked up hyperdrive. Mm-hmm. Like, you can fly it, but you can't really go anywhere. And he's like, oh, no, it's fine. I'm just flying it up to that Star Destroyer.
So we open the next chapter with him flying up to that Star Destroyer. And he's like, hey, it's Headhunter 079. Let me in. And they're like, please state your identification. Tell Booster Tarek that he needs to let me in. And if he doesn't, I'll blow off all your turbo lasers.
Look, your shit's all fucked. Nobody is manning these lasers. One of them stopped tracking me halfway through.
Yeah.
Just let him know.
I mean, ultimately, the big problem that Booster is operating under is that, yes, it's really cool that he has a Star Destroyer, but he's not, like, a bad guy. He's just, like, a neutrally smuggler. And there are only really two ways to own and operate a Star Destroyer. Either be connected to a prodigiously enormous military, or be mean enough to steal the shit you need with your Star Destroyer.
Yeah, I mean,
and he isn't doing either of those.
Yeah, he's like, look, it functions, it works, it's got some defense, it's not bristling like mm-hmm. you would normally see, but that's because I've essentially turned this into a smuggler cruise ship.
Yes. But they're all being assholes to him. He gets assigned to a docking port that's really fucking far from Booster's office, and he's like, God damn it, I still have like a partially broken leg, you asshole.
Of course, if Booster knew my leg was broken, he'd have me just park in like a garbage dump and walk even farther.
Yes, the thing that we are learning as we make our way into this chapter, I think we may have seen a mention of it here or there in the earliest chapters of the book, is that Booster Tarek, the father of his wife...
Yes, the father of his wife.
The father of Korinhorn's wife... does not like Korinhorn.
No, because he's like, look, dude,
you're an ex-cop.
You're Corsac. I'm a smuggler. Your dad put me away. I killed your dad. We don't really have a lot of good between us.
Yeah.
It's basically Mirax, the only thing stopping us from murdering each other.
Yeah. So he gets landed in an uncomfortable spot, gets out of the ship. They don't provide a ladder for him, so he has to slide off it because he can't just jump down because he's got a broken leg.
Yeah.
And right away, as soon as he lands, he realizes that this is going to go worse than he thought. And as a Nikto guard shows up, or no, a Klaatuinian.
Yep.
Klaatuinian guard shows up with, as described in the book, a face like peeling ceramic, which I was like, dude, that's mean. That's just what Klaatuinians look like.
Oh, no, wait. He's a Weequay.
Oh, is he? Okay.
The Klaatuinian is the cab driver later.
That's right. You're right. The Weequays are the ones from Jabba's Sail Barge where they look like brown but with like peely bits.
Yeah.
Like, it was like, that's a mean thing to say about a Weequay. That's what they all look like.
Oh, Weequay.
This guy's so racist. He constantly brings up Hutts.
He just hates Hutts, which I get.
And Weequays, apparently.
So, you know, he's like, oh, you're fucked now. We're gonna shake you down and fuck you up. And he's like, dude,
I don't care. Just do what
whatever.
You gotta. Just take me to fucking the Booster.
Let me see Booster. And the guy's got, like, a stun baton.
Mm-hmm.
And he, you know, shoves it into the guy or Corin's side and is like, let's go, buddy. And he's like, hey, man, chill out.
Yeah.
My dude, chill your shit. And the guy, like, tries to zap him, and he does one of his few Jedi tricks, which is to shunt the energy, so he just, you know, no-sells it and goes, huh, think your baton's broken.
Batteries must be out, and like he gets another hit, and he like sends it back into the bulkhead of the Star Destroyer, and it causes a nearby Bothan's fur to go popping up like Van de Graaff generator style, which I got to assume is very funny to see.
Yeah.
But no one notices, and so eventually he's like, hey, dude, I think
yeah, he does it a couple times,
yeah.
And the guard's like, huh, that's weird. Puts it against the palm of his hand and hits the button again, and then zaps himself, and he's like, huh, all right.
I do appreciate that they switched to the point of view for that. So it was like, he raises it to his hand, puts his hand on it, presses the button, and then we switched to a couple of guards who were like dealing as the Weequay was twitching himself around on the floor.
Yeah, I fucking, Korin caught the baton before it fell with the guy, and he's like, hey, somebody want this baton?
Obviously defective, he says as he hands it off to one of them. And they're like, ugh, whatever. And then as Horn, you know, is like exulting in his being too cool for the room thing, he gets grabbed by lapels and rammed into a wall because Booster's come downstairs.
Yeah. He's like, you son of a bitch, where's my daughter?
You piece of shit. And, you know, he's like, you two, take him to my office and toss him in there. And this is another moment for Corin's racism corner, where he gets marched in there, frog marched, one might say, except it's Star Wars. So, you know,
we've Ribbit marched.
We met that Ribbit that one time. Remember Morath Duel?
Morath.
Yeah, so what if we Ribbit march instead of frog marched? And I'm like, no, because Ribbits are sentient.
Yeah, but what if I marched like a Ribbit?
Why wouldn't you march like a frog? Another thing that we know is canon in Star Wars.
Do we?
Yes, there's one outside of Jabba's palace. It grabs the thing. It's part of the interstitial cut. There's a thing flying around. This thing goes, gets it with his tongue, and then goes, brap. Fucking sand desert toad. They're a real thing in Star Wars. Also,
oh, yeah, they're toads, but there aren't frogs.
Also, Morath Duel gets described as frog-like and Batrachian while they're describing him, which means that they have a frame of reference for what frogs are, so they can call this frog-like thing a frog. Racist. Maybe a minor one. Maybe it's a microaggression, but it's still something. Anyway, they drag him to Booster's office, and it turns out that Booster's been living like shit because of his missing daughter.
Well, his office is just absolute trash garbage. Exactly. He doesn't fucking keep this one, and it's just his office that's on the, like, loading dock, so I'm sure he's got a ton of them.
Probably, yeah, fair point. Probably has lots of offices. This one mostly has a deactivated protocol droid in it that's being used as a bandolier holder for blaster casings.
Yeah, it's basically like a hat rack for blasters.
Yep. Plus a bunch of garbage on the floor and shit. And he's like, oh, I hate this in here.
Just stacked data pads.
Yeah. And he sits in the dark by himself thinking about what's going to happen for a bit until Booster finally comes in and he's like, all right, you dumb piece of shit. How long has Mirax been missing and what do you know?
Yeah, and they have this wonderful back and forth where...
you can tell they have a lot in common, effectively.
Oh, yeah. And both of them are just like, you piece of shit. No, you piece of shit.
Because they're doing... We've spent this entire book in fucking Corinhorn's head, and that means him constantly reading everybody. And we have to sit there as he goes, I don't think you really think that. And the reason I don't think you really think that is because if you really thought that, then by now you would have done this. But you didn't do this, you did that, which means you think this and not that. And you're just like, I fucking hate this guy. Just skip through, just do the part where you're like, I don't know, I deduced it because it's elementary, dear Watson. Let's just move the fuck along. But
no
now,
way, man.
Now we've got two of them and they're doing it to each other.
Yep. It's great. The two of them are just like, I see that you are doing a certain facial expression, which means that you are concerned about whatever. Ah, yes, but you have forgotten that if you would have not mentioned this, then I wouldn't have done this. So you see, and I'm like, all right, Sherlock and Moriarty, quit jerking each other off and let's get on with it.
But what you did not know, Corinhorn, is that I am left-handed.
Oh, everyone knew that.
Damn it. So Booster's a neat character, though. Owns his own Star Destroyer, king of the smugglers, one robot eye.
Yep.
Big burly dude with a mustache. Cool character. I always thought it was kind of neat. But he's basically pissed off that Corinhorn's wife is missing, and he doesn't seem to have done anything about it. And Horn is calling him out on it because he's like, okay, well, how come it took you this long to show up here then? She's been missing 10 weeks. Are you telling me you didn't call your daughter just to find out that she was missing for the last 10 weeks?
Yeah, and I know you never sent a message to me or tried to get in contact with me through, like, Wedge or anything. So you clearly... probably already knew that she was gone and were looking into it yourself. Mm-hmm. He's like, eh, well.
But his big deal is, whose fault is it that she's missing? So he keeps harping on that. That's Booster's whole deal. He's like, are you going to blame this one on the New Republic? Kraken or the New Republic? And he's like, no, this is my bad. It's my fault that I haven't gone and gotten her yet, but I have my reasons. I have good reasons for why I haven't. And there's even better reasons why I didn't tell your big dumb ass. Because if I told you, you'd go herring off to the Nelhutta system and with a fucking Star Destroyer and spook the invids.
You would fuck everything up. And
if I told the New Republic, they would send the New Republic to Nelhutta with the New Republic and fuck everything up. So I made a careful personal decision to do this alone because anyone else would fuck it up.
So what I need from you... is to get off my ass.
I love it. He's like, so you need to do the following two things. And Tarek's like, the fuck did you just, you're going to give me orders? Are you kidding? And he's like, no, I'm not, because you didn't do shit yet. You clearly knew that something was up, and you didn't do a goddamn thing until you had me in your sights to yell at.
And that also tells me you don't have any leads, because if you did, you wouldn't have given a shit about me, and you'd be following them.
Yeah.
So you need my lead.
Mm-hmm. So Tarek's like, Tarek's whole deal, though, he keeps hammering this home is, whose fault is this? And Horn keeps going, it's mine, dude. I'm not going to blame the New Republic. I'm not going to throw the Jedi under the bus. I'm not even going to blame the Invids. I'm responsible for this detail because she's my wife and I'm responsible for my wife. And finally, Tarek's like, all right, you son of a bitch. I was waiting to see if you'd try and blame someone else and you didn't. So this is a good look for you.
Yeah, good on you.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, all right, so we can be at each other's throat forever and neither of us will ever be happy again because it means Mirax will be lost.
Yeah.
Or you can do two things for me.
Yes. The other thing worthy of note is even though this is like Booster's like tertiary office on his fucking mile-long ship, it does have a bunch of pictures of Mirax on holo projectors.
He's got a little holo cube that does the rotating picture thing.
And as Horde notes, because he's obsessive about noting details, it's chronologically arranged and
by theme.
And themed. So he's like, yeah, no matter how much you say you don't care, you do.
You care.
Yeah. Which, yes, obviously, duh. That's not a big discovery. Like, everyone knows that Booster Tarek has one soft spot, and her name is Mirax.
But yeah, he's like, all right, two things. First, I need as much data as you can get about the Invid crews.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're a smuggler guy. You've got a giant fucking network. Just get me some information now that we know where probably this went down on Nalhutta. You know, focus in on there, crews going in and out from there, whatever you can find.
All the Invid stuff. And he's like, sure, no problem. Talon Card, because he finds out that Mara Jade has been involved in helping find data on Mirax. So he's like, Jade? Card's old heavy? Because he has a friendly rivalry going with the other major smuggler, Talon Card. So he's like, sure, I'll get you that detail. Card may think he's the big information broker, but he didn't got shit on me.
Yeah, and he's like, all right, other one is I need you to get me into Corellia and then get me out of Corellia.
And this is where we find out something that I did not know. At the apparently, Corellia went over to the Empire and is still with the Empire in its current state.
I guess?
Or at least when it lost its Imperial control, the local leaders took over in a very draconian fashion.
Yes.
Corsac is gone, and old Corsac members and New Republic staff like Corrin are not welcome on Corellia.
Oh, yeah. No, he had to flee planet, and he's still basically not welcome back.
Yes.
So,
plus, everything else we hear about when we make our way through the next chapter is that Corellia has basically turned into a police state. Like, it used to be a police state, but it was like a police state the way the United States is a police state. And not the police state the way, like, books describe police states. This is, you know, the difference between, like, a corrupt army that everyone pretends is okay and a corrupt army that no one pretends is okay. Anyway, he's like, are you fucking kidding? You want me to smuggle you into Corellia and back out? And back out? That's nuts.
He's like, well, look.
You're going to have to do it.
It's going to take a Corellian Jedi in order to save Mirax, and if I don't get down there, there won't be any.
I love that part, because he's like, well, a Corellian Jedi is going to need to rescue her. He says, holding his lightsaber hilt aloft, and I am one. And it's like, don't fucking He-Man up the room. You're in a storage closet. But anyway, we get a whole routine at this point that basically just gives us a rundown of what it's like on Booster Ship, which you can jump right through. He's got three public access levels based on how rich and important you are.
Yeah.
If you're in the black level, then it's like worse than Mos Eisley.
Yeah, or
like
it's just a bunch of shifty criminals who can't afford anything, all just scraping at the bottom of the barrel of trying to get stuff.
Most of them can't even afford to leave the ship.
Oh, yeah. They're just spending their time trying to essentially work up enough to get out of here.
Yes. Now, even as he's like passing through that zone, Horn's like, what is the point of this anyway? And eventually he's like, oh, I guess it's like a sieve for information.
Yeah.
Like, eventually some of these people are going to break and they might have some useful details.
Oh, yeah. He's just like, look, you're going to catch someone down enough on their luck that they end up at this level.
Mm-hmm.
And if they have anything of import, the only way they're getting out is by giving it to Booster.
Yeah.
So he's like, yeah, man, this is just a catch-all for being able to get stuff I want.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if someone wants to hire a super cheap, sleazy guy down here, they can do it.
I also like to think that it's in case the ship gets boarded, that he can be like, try and route them through the black level, see how many, see how they deal with 3 million gang members.
Yeah, just have them run through here, and I don't know, they'll probably slip and fall on whatever liquid happens to be around.
Yeah.
I don't want to think about it.
Now, up from that is blue level, which is the only level Horn is allowed into. He's not allowed to the top rich people
diamond level
because Horn, because I love that Tarek clearly just doesn't like him, so he doesn't want him to see the good shit, but he's like, I can't let you up there because you're Corsac, and a lot of those people are like high-class criminals, and you cannot ruin the vibe.
He's like, dude, even letting you on blue level is bad enough.
Yeah.
You are harshing the smuggler vibe.
Yeah, given that blue level is basically just like every smuggler spaceport that he's ever been to before.
Yeah, and he's like, oh, this isn't shitty spaceport. This is just the nice general smuggler area.
Yeah.
You can get some stuff. It's not, you know,
it's more Cloud City than like Nar Shaddaa.
Exactly.
Yeah. But so at that level, he gets sent to a tailor who gives him an outfit other than Jedi robes. And he's so paranoid that he's like, I bet Tarek probably told this guy to short me on collar so I'm choking while I'm on Corellia. But the little dude is a Sullustan, and the Sullustan's like, how dare you? I'm a serious tailor, and I take my job very seriously. Blah, 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 blah. I'm so glad we got a new one.
Yeah.
Although the term they use in this book isn't abba blah, blah, blah. It's he greebles at him.
Yeah. Greeble, greeble, greeble.
Racist. At least say a blah, blah, blah. That's perfectly fine. That's
so fine.
And then he gets, this is the plan for how he's going to get smuggled to Corellia. We'll do it fast. There's a rich couple in diamond level who fancy themselves smugglers and want to try the piratical life. We got a couple of fucking Steed Bonnets who really wanted, yes, I just watched Our Flag Means Death. No, that would have been, yes, I would have still used that reference before that, because I do like the Age of Piracy a great deal.
Yeah, no, it's just, you know, a couple people doing, like, ooh, we're doing smuggler vacation. Oh, we're naughty. And so he reverse psychologies them into, oh, if you really want to get the smuggler lifestyle, it's not enough to buy smuggled goods. You should smuggle something in.
You got to get stuff in there. And so he gives them a couple different things to smuggle in, with the basic idea being that hopefully Corin will make it through his chaff.
Well, yeah, because he knows these two have no idea how to smuggle anything.
Mm-hmm.
So when they get down there, the second an inspector shows up, they're like, we will give you $500,000 not to look in our car.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, well, fucking now I have to. What the shit?
I love that. Yeah, because Horn's watching it happen. He's like watching as they fly in, and they're like, ah, an official large, unusually large bribe. And he's like, the official immediately is like, hey, Chuck, come take a look at these two.
hey, get over here. And so
you got to see this.
Since he's the one in charge of doing the cargo, he's basically calling in the people who are in charge of looking over credentials. So they're just like, yeah, go on through. We got to deal with this. Well, this is hilarious.
It's great because it works in his favor in so many ways, because it does that. But also, everyone's like, these guys are rich as fuck. All these officials are corrupt, and they want to wet their beaks on the deal.
Yeah.
But also, they're like so amazed that this is happening that they're like, yeah, we're going to catch these guys because they must be unbelievable master idiot criminals if they're offering us this much as a bribe. Everyone else on their ship doesn't even matter. We're just going to get them.
Yeah. They're like, all right. Yeah. Pass on through. I don't want to be late to the bribe party that is currently happening.
So Horch just grabs his bag and goes, and he's like, yeah, sucks to be those two idiots.
But
hails a taxi cab driven, as we mentioned earlier, by a Klaatuinian.
Yeah. And then he sees the weird gentrification of Corellia in a specific thing. There was a like space pirate trader row,
mm-hmm.
and it used to be the only semi-seedy place to go get some business done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you'd have some less than savory people there, but it was still fairly well lit. It was nice enough.
Yeah, it was New York in the 80s.
Yeah. And now there's just a fucking Flavor Town restaurant here.
It's New York in the now. It's Times Square now, where there's an M&M museum.
Yeah. And he's just like, oh, man, you dumb motherfuckers. You went through, put a nice coat of paint on here, drove everyone else out, and thought, good enough. Where instead it's, oh, yes, it's essentially what I got, was Vegas from the 50s to now, where it was,
oh yeah,
you went
too.
To Vegas and it was kind of seedy, but that was kind of the fun part of it.
Yeah,
you're like, oh, there's some mafia guys here, but you know, when I go to the casino, it's kind of fun to rub elbows with them. And then now we're you're like, oh, you've cleaned it up so much and pushed it all to the edge that if you aren't on the strip, you're just like, ooh, oh no, oh no.
Yeah, yeah. But he is like, oh, like, oh God, they gentrified the shit out of this. That said, do pull over because I do want some Bubba Gump Shrimp Company. I want to pay $30 for fried shrimp now.
Oh my God, I need a boba right now. What is that, a Bubba Gump Shrimp and Tea Company?
Pull over, driver. Just everything you'd see on a Times Square or I don't know, the part of Monterey that's like that. Just the same thing.
Yeah, no, he's just going through and he's like, oh my God, they put in a Wolfgang Pucks? This is amazing.
Ooh, two Paneras. And yeah, there's a Sephora between them.
But he's like, yeah, if you go like two blocks in any other direction, they have made it a million times worse than what this street used to be.
Yeah. So he gets driven to the address of his grandfather's house because he needs to go talk to his still surviving grandfather, Rostek Horn. His father's dead. His grandfather is alive.
Yes.
Now, Rostek was also a Corset cop, but retired decades ago.
Yeah, retired a while ago. And he remembers his grandfather being like, oh, yeah, he had a house over in this neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
The whole deal was he's like, yep, I just want to retire. I want to fucking make some plants. I'm just a gardener now. Like, mm-hmm. That's all I want to do.
Yep.
Just live a simple life.
Yeah, but of course, it's a Stackpole book and he's a Horn, so that means he's got to have his fingers in a bunch of, like super smart illicit pies.
Well, yeah, the thing is, he gets there, and instead of it being like, here's the block where my grandpa's house is, it's, here's the block that has now been gated off and is the single house that is for my grandfather.
And it's not my grandpa's house. It's like a three-story squat edifice of a building that has no charm to it and just looks like an office. What the fuck is this? And the driver's like, yeah, that's the address you gave me. See, look, and he taps like his little computer thing. And he's like,
and he even pulls the little phone, like walkie-talkie thing, yeah, off of the wall. And he's like, hey, what's up? And they're like, this is the Horn residence. He's like, hey, there you go.
I would like to speak to Rostek Horn. Rostek Horn does not wish to be disturbed. I am an important person he will want to talk to.
Kieran Halcyon.
Yeah.
Tell him he knows me from back in the day. He was like a grandpa to me.
Yeah.
Tell him exactly that.
And this random voice is like, ah, I'll tell him. Okay, fine, you can come in. And then he gets to go in. And sure enough, he lives in a giant, super guarded, full of police officers building.
Yeah. And, you know, by the time he manages to make it through this palatial estate to his grandpa, who he assumes is going to be, like, in just, you know, dirty overalls doing some gardening. He's like, no, he's in the garden, but he's wearing, like, a full fucking black suit.
Mm-hmm. And the grandfather turns around, sees him, and Horn, not wanting to trust anything, Chance uses the force to plant images of baby Corin Horn doodling around the neighborhood.
Yeah, and he's like, hello, Mr. Horn. I think you know me.
So grandpa's like, all right, everyone else get the fuck out.
Everybody fuck off.
Yeah. Are you sure? Yeah, go make me a light lunch.
And by light, I mean not just less gravy.
Fucking Corellian food.
Jesus.
Go get me a Bubba Gump shrimp plate.
I want you to get me a wedge salad. A wedge salad.
That's not a healthy salad. You know what? I don't care.
You know what? It's fine.
It's fucking ranch and bacon bits.
Look, just because you took a quarter of a head of lettuce and decided to eat that doesn't mean it's healthy when you drown it in ranch and put cheese and bacon on it.
You don't even eat the lettuce. I've seen you throw away seven of those wedges. Anyway, so yeah, it looks like Rostek still has his fingers in the deal a lot more than he was supposed to have.
Oh yeah, he's like, look, I tried to retire. Thing is, because I was a ridiculous investigative cop, I had a ton of information on a ton of corrupt people.
So
who,
a lot of people,
when they took power,
yeah,
were like, hey man, I hear you got information on us. And he's like, yep.
And they're like, we'll burn it or we'll burn you. And he's like, no.
Yeah, they burned his house and his dad's old house down.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, yeah, Thing is, I'm not an idiot. I didn't just keep it in a drawer in my house. And that's when little bits of information would show up with flowers that were specifically things he had bred.
Mm-hmm. His own hybrids. He's an award-winning gardener.
Yeah. So he's like, yeah, I would just send little data chips with a, like, hybrid rose.
And an incriminating detail on it.
Yeah. Just to some politician and be like, hey, dude, maybe fuck off.
Yeah. And he did it to ruin people. He'd be like, oh, I'd send the wife of some guy a hollow of his or her senator husband cheating on her.
So, you know, at that point, they just decided, well, we'll build you a new house. Mm-hmm. We'll give you so much stuff and we'll fill it with all the best bugs.
And security people. Constant security people who don't like you and you don't like them.
Except he's like, little do they know, they're all loyal to me because yeah. I'm the reason they are in the system to get picked to be for my protection anyway.
Yeah, so obviously this guy's the mastermind of all masterminds, and he is still controlling the local government. Now he just sends notes to people that are like, I don't like the thing you're doing.
Oh, yeah.
With he's a flower like, attached.
There's an entire cabal of people who are obsessed with trying to figure out if certain flowers mean certain things, mm-hmm. and if like, oh, does it mean one thing if he sends a flower that only blooms once, or if he sends a night-blooming flower. Oh, we have to figure out his flower code. And he's like, I'm just fucking with people. I'm not even doing anything. I let them figure it out.
If I send them a night lily, it's because I want them to get their dick wet to death. Call back to a very old episode.
Very old episode.
But yeah, he's basically just like, all right, well, let me just, you know, tell you the whole fucking story, Grandpa. I'm looking for my wife, you know, I'm working with Booster Tarek.
And he's like, yeah, and I also assume you're looking for your Jedi heritage, given that you Jedi mind tricked shit into my brain.
Also, there was a deal where your dad left information with me for you in case you ever develop Jedi talents. So I'm assuming you came to collect that. And,
yeah.
And Horn's like, yeah, I'm really surprised you kept it. He's like, boy, I've waited 50 years for you to ask me for that. And you're not even 50 years old, so get this through the gravity of your head.
Yeah, dude, my very best friend was a Jedi who I needed to save this shit for. My dude.
Yeah. So Horn's like trying to be flippant about it. He's like, so I guess if I had never shown up to claim it, you would have sent me some flowers, huh? And his grandfather's like, boy, I would have sent you a shitload of flowers. That's where I've been storing the secret Jedi information.
Yeah. Apparently, it ends there, but I assume, yeah, some genetic code that you can decrypt and it's got info.
Yes, because that's, yeah, like John says, that's the exact end of the chapter. That's where we're done. But it's got to be genetic code or like holograms that are visible if you shine certain light on the flowers. We'll find out soon enough.
We'll find out in the next chapter, and you'll find out in the next episode.
That said, I'm like, what the fuck is he possibly going to glean here that matters? Did the Corellians have a specific bit of information in their ancient Jedi history about where Mirax Tarek would be kept in the far future?
Well,
you can find out, as a Corellian Jedi, you should probably know you're not very good at telekinesis. And they'll be like, oh, hey, well, what do you know? I know now.
Oh, good. Yeah.
But
I know
you
are that
Bishop.
There is some sort of tradition or something that he's supposed to get from the Corellian Jedi.
Do it next Thanksgiving. Your wife is still missing. What are we doing here?
Yeah, but he might learn a cool trick.
I guess if it turns out the Corellian Jedi's whole big trick was that they're really good at finding women in comas, then yeah, that's you got me there.
I know. It's serious. Mirax in a coma. I know.
So anyway, that's where the chapters end.
There it is.
Hey, good times.
Oh, boogada bet.
And as always, if you want to hear yet more Star Wars information, we've got you covered. Go on down to patreon.com/systemmastery and support us at the $2 level.
That's right.
$2 usually twice a month. So about $4 a month to get so much content. We get a bonus episode of Expounded Universe every time we release an episode of Expounded Universe. That's where we go to Wikipedia. We find weird stories from the Star Wars canon, all of it. We bring them together. We tell them to each other. We tell them to you. There's so many of those. There's more than 100 of those waiting for you on the bonus content right now. Plus, you get all the System Mastery bonus content, which was at the $1 level. Lots of us making characters in the games we just reviewed. What a great deal. John, is it a good deal?
It's a great deal, mm-hmm. and you can even go to the $5 level, unlock everything, get the monthly afterthought, you get the TV mastery where we're going through cartoons based on R-rated movies right now, and you also get special access in our Discord mm-hmm. to members only channels. You get a special color for your name. You get the Ginsu knives. You get the Garfield phone.
And if you pledge in the next 30 minutes, you get all of that twice.
Two times.
Once, twice, two times a pledger.
Everyone's going to call you old Johnny two times.
Uh-huh. So just go on and support us right there at the Patreon that lets us do what we do so that you can enjoy the things that we create.
That's right.
What a great deal, right? And otherwise, as always, if you don't have any money, guess what? We understand.
Guess what? Fuck you.
No, it's fine. We live in a world where no one has any money.
It's true.
We get it. So if that's the situation, just write about us in nice places. Say nice things about us.
Just in person, go mm-hmm. up to one person on the street, grab them by the lapels, and go, my dude, have you tried Expounded Universe?
Write slash fic about us. Not ficking us, but, you know, pick interesting people for the two of us to be with. Individually.
Individually. Never in the same story.
Don't put us in, like, a triad or something. Yeah.
If I'm in a story, I do not want Jeff... I don't want his name to even appear in the story. Not mentioned. Doesn't even exist in universe.
Yeah, no, it's completely... It's an AU where I'm not there, but John is Christian Grey. My tastes are unconventional because I won't eat anything spicy.
My tastes are unconventional. I have the dumbest flavors of Oreos.
Anyway, thank you so much for your support. And we'll see you in 2 weeks with more Star Wars content. We're going to take another week off for John's vacation.
Sorry, everyone.
Mm-hmm. We got to do what we got to do. Sometimes the two of us need mental health days, too.
Sometimes some crimes.
Mm-hmm. They'll go slipping through those cracks. But until then, I've been Elan Sleaze-Bogano.
And I love flowers. And the flowers mean love, but only if they're blooming. We'll be right back.